Will Hong Kong's new leader further erode freedoms there? John Lee is the former security chief who led the 2019 crackdown on pro-democracy protesters. He's pledging to uphold the rule of law. Does that mean that China's grip on Britain's former colony is tightening even further? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the program. I'm Nastasia Tay. Now, the result was a foregone conclusion because there was only one candidate to choose from. Following a secret ballot, Hong Kong has a new leader. John Lee is due to replace Carrie Lam as chief executive on July 1st. Now, the staunch China loyalist was elected by a committee of around 1,500 members, all vetted to ensure their patriotism to President Xi Jinping and Beijing. Now, he says he wants to unify society and make the Asian financial hub more competitive. But activists in Hong Kong say they fear that leaders in Beijing are further tightening their grip. Adrian Brown has more.
With China's endorsement, it was just a question of how big John Lee's winning margin would be. To give the appearance of an open contest, the secret votes were presented to the election committee before being counted.
Congratulations.
A landslide, 1,416 votes. In his acceptance speech, Lee promised to lead a Hong Kong that was caring, open, vibrant, and vigilant.
Safeguarding our country's sovereignty, national security, and development interests. Protecting Hong Kong from internal and external threats and ensuring its stability will continue to be of paramount importance.
The former number two in the Hong Kong government had previously served as security chief, authorizing the use of tear gas, rubber bullets, and occasional live rounds to disperse protesters during the unrest of 2019. It was an election day of one candidate, three protesters, and lots of police. 7,000 officers, in fact, enough to keep the few dissenting voices well away from the convention center where the vote was held. Analysts say that John Lee has China's trust, but winning the trust of Hong Kong could be more difficult.
Trust can be rebuilt through several ways. One way is by restoring accountable government in Hong Kong, which has been debased, I would say, under the administration of Carrie Lam. So that requires the cooperation of the media, of LegCo, of civil society.
Sunday was also Mother's Day in Hong Kong. Some people we spoke to were aware there was an election, but just weren't sure of the candidate's name.
Do you know who won the election?
John, I forgot his surname, but yeah, John.
So you are aware of the chief executive election?
Yeah, but...
Do you know who won the election?
Sir, there's only one candidate. Who else?
Hong Kong people were supposed to choose their leader for the first time in 2017. It didn't happen then, it hasn't happened now, raising the prospect that this could be the model for future elections to choose Hong Kong's leader. Lee is due to be sworn in as chief executive on July the 1st, traditionally a ceremony attended by China's president. Adrian Brown for Inside Story.
Well, you'll recall, after 156 years of colonial rule, Britain handed back control of Hong Kong to China 25 years ago. Under the terms of the 1997 deal, China pledged to give the territory a high degree of autonomy with its own executive, legislature and judiciary, a framework known as One Country, Two Systems to last 50 years. Leaders in Beijing also agreed to guarantee rights and freedoms for Hong Kong's people, including the right to protest, a free press and freedom of speech. But then in recent years, Beijing has cracked down on those freedoms, stoking mass protests and international criticism. In 2020, China voted to introduce a national security law in Hong Kong, giving police broad powers to punish critics and silence dissent, fundamentally changing life for its 7 million people. They've had no say in who their new leader is. Instead, a committee of Hong Kong's elite, vetted by Beijing, chose him in a one-horse race. Well, let's now bring in our guests. In Hong Kong, we have Tom Grundy. He's the editor-in-chief and the founder of Hong Kong Free Press, an independent publication. In Beijing, Victor Gao is a chair professor at Soochow University. And in Nottingham, in England, Steve Tsang is the director of the China Institute at SOAS, University of London. Welcome to the programme, gentlemen. Thanks for being with us today. Steve, I want to start with the process that's just taking place, an appointment rather than an election, it seems. This committee of electors, very much handpicked. Do you feel like there's now really been a move away from even the attempted semblance of democracy?
I think you are right in saying that. What we have seen in Hong Kong is a change from the past of a pretense to elections to now it is elections in quotation marks Chinese style. The election, such as it was, that took place in Hong Kong really is no different from elections under the Communist Party.
Hmm. Well, Victor, let me bring you in here because you yourself have been in the corridors of power in Beijing, I understand. What is China's strategy here?
Well, first of all, let's congratulate Mr. Li on becoming the next chief executive of Hong Kong. I think his election speaks loudly that stability is restored in Hong Kong and the society at large is ready to embrace development and growth as the principal challenge for the residents in Hong Kong. Now, for this election to take place in Hong Kong, let's look at it in historical terms. The British colonists ruled Hong Kong for more than 150 years. They never elected the governor of Hong Kong. The governor of Hong Kong has always been appointed by the monarch, and he did not represent the people of Hong Kong. He represented the British monarch, the imperialist interests of Hong Kong. Therefore, whatever grievances or complaints or dissatisfaction you may have, you need to say that whatever democratic rights in Hong Kong today is already a far cry from the no democracy at all before 1997. Whether democracy can be further enhanced and improved, of course there will be. However, no one can use democracy or rule of law as a hiding shield to promote the so-called independence of Hong Kong or to deny the Chinese sovereignty over Hong Kong. This is made clear, crystal clear now, by Mr. Li's election. I think people in Hong Kong will continue to practice capitalism with Hong Kong style, and they will be very firmly committed to the one country, two system principle, which will govern Hong Kong up to 2047.
Well, we did see some opposition, I guess we could say, three protesters outside. And I understand 8 committee members, I believe, voted against Mr. Li. Tom, are you concerned that there might be consequences for any of those people?
Well, who knows? It's meant to be a secret ballot. There were also 4 blank ballots, apparently. But let's just look at the numbers, you know, the facts of what just happened today. 1,461 voters in a city of 7 million, representing 0.02% of the public, cast a ballot. And those people were vetted by none other than a panel headed by John Lee himself last year. He got a 99% support rate amongst these voters. And yet in the wider community, he has an approval rating of 37%, according to the last credible poll. There were 7,000 police officers, a lot of them assigned to that protest you mentioned today. That's almost 5 cops per voter. And all this cost the election budget over this year is $30 million US dollars. Mm. And just to respond there to Victor, it's very true. British Times, there was little intention to install full democracy, but there were attempts made at democratic reforms in both the 50s and the 90s on their way out, which were quashed by Beijing.
Steve, I want to bring you in here because I could see that you didn't necessarily agree with Mr. Gao. I'll let you have the floor.
If we deal with history, as Victor has raised, then we will have to deal with history as facts rather than fiction. If we compare the last 4 British governors with the 4 chief executives since Hong Kong became Chinese again, we can see that all 4 of the last British governors receive very, very high popular rating. There was no democratic, formal democratic accountability of the British governors to Hong Kong, but every one of them was so responsive to public opinions that every one of them received very high rating. None of that applies to the four chief executives of Hong Kong. There was no British governor who had to go to Hong Kong with 7,000 security service people present to make sure that there were no incidents. That just happened with the election of John Lee.
Well, coming back to present day, I want to get to John Lee in just a moment, but I also want to take a look at Carrie Lam's legacy. You've spoken there, Steve, about approval ratings. Now, I see Carrie Lam is leaving office as the least popular chief executive ever, 33.4% approval. I mean, arguably, it was the 2019 protests that caused Xi Jinping to harden his stance on Hong Kong. And much of that, people believe, was due to Lam's handling of the extradition bill. Much of that driven, some might argue, by her own political ambitions. Tom, you're in Hong Kong. How will people remember her?
Well, somewhat of a disastrous legacy in that we have seen three news outlets closed in the last year or two. Bear in mind, John Lee was the number two official throughout much of the last year and the security chief before that overseeing the protest. 60-plus civil society groups disbanded last year. Most of the opposition, the Democrats, are either behind bars, have fled into self-exile, or have quit politics altogether. We're seeing a mass exodus in light of the national security law and harsh COVID rules that Lam has also been accused of mishandling. Protests are effectively illegal in the city at the moment. And about a year ago, in the Press Freedom Index, Hong Kong was 80th. And last week, it saw the biggest fall of any territory in the world to 148. So this is not only what John Lee is inheriting, but also what he shares responsibility for as a top official throughout her tenure.
Well, let me throw that then to Victor. Given the level of unpopularity of Carrie Lam, the legacy that she's left, and how she moved closer to Beijing, and the perception of John Lee as being very close to Beijing, what challenges is he likely to face trying to get Hong Kongers on side?
I think Mr. Lee has huge challenges. He needs to bring the society together. He needs to reopen Hong Kong to foreign business interests. He hopefully will need to visit the United States and many other European countries, and Japan and Australia, Canada, you name it, to make sure that Hong Kong is here to stay and the one country, two system will remain in effect up to 2047. And Hong Kong will continue to practice capitalism with Hong Kong characteristics, with rule of law, with the Hong Kong dollar.
You've talked about his engagement with various different capitals. I mean, he can't set foot in the US because he's sanctioned by the US. And obviously, the crackdown in Hong Kong has left a bitter taste in the mouth of many foreign leaders. I'm curious about where, Steve, you think this might be going in terms of how Hong Kong is going to be perceived in the eyes of the rest of the world and how China is playing its cards here.
Well, I think China just created a moral hazard for leaders of democratic countries in Europe and in North America. If they accept John Lee to visit, then they basically are telling authoritarian countries in the world that if they then make somebody who has done something particularly odious, put him in a position of authority, and whatever sanctions imposed on that person will be lifted. So this is making it practically impossible for the United States government to allow John Lee to visit the US. And then we will get into it, an acrimony of the Chinese authorities accusing the US and perhaps other Western countries for being hostile to Hong Kong because they would not accept the chief executive of Hong Kong. We should never be in a situation like that.
I want to talk a little bit more about John Lee, the man, because it will affect how he also approaches everything.
It's very difficult for any of us to
come on in, Tom.
Sorry, I think both have referred to, you know, Hong Kong's international status here and John Lee's promise to restore its international standing. None of this is going to be possible for as long as Hong Kong is pursuing what China is in terms of a zero COVID or dynamic zero policy. At the moment, we have masks on 24/7, 7 days quarantine in a hotel for any arrivals. This is meant to be Asia's world city, an international city. Hong Kong is not going to be able to change that and regain its status amid this big brain drain and exodus unless China changes its isolationist COVID policies. And that's not going to change, certainly until perhaps November when Xi Jinping is rubber stamped in to lead for life. So the doors are closed really here in terms of how much John Lee can do because the mainland border has to open with China before it can open to international travel. And he himself and the current administration have admitted that. So Hong Kong's going to be cut off for some time yet.
Well, amid all of that, I see in his 44-page manifesto, he vowed to tackle inequality. Unlike previous chief executives, he's not a politician, not a civil servant, not from the business world. Mr. Gao, what do you make of his ability to address some of these issues, especially given the context that Tom's just described?
Well, that's exactly what I said, that Mr. Lee need to bring Hong Kong together. Hong Kong has huge challenges in terms of housing, jobs, for example, creativity and innovation, as well as connecting in a greater depth with China's mainland, as well as with the rest of the world. The world is changing. China is changing. The Greater Bay Area is changing. Hong Kong, with all its advantages, should adapt to the changing circumstances rather than being complacent or rather than being left behind. I think all these need to be addressed by the new chief executive. Therefore, I think reaching out to the rest of the world, including the Western world, as well as Chinese mainland, in particular the Greater Bay Area, to address all these challenges in Hong Kong will be Mr. Lee's top priority. Now, allow me to make one point. We know what the United States now is dealing with January the 6th insurrection occupying the capital of the United States in Washington, D.C. Whatever that happened in Hong Kong, comparing with the occupation of the capital city in the United States, really should be judged by the same light. The United States now is accusing MAGA as sedition and rebellion, as anarchy, as undermining rule of law. We should use the same criteria to look at those rioters storming the LegCo building, setting up arson, attacking police, you name it. I think Hong Kong police
is wrong. And
they voted out Trump. They had the opportunity to vote him out.
Tom, I'm going to bring you in because you were on the ground with the protesters in the streets during many, many of these days. What would you say to Mr. Gao?
I agree perhaps this time things may be different because, you know, the last five leaders have always said that they're going to solve the housing problem and inequality. You have rising unemployment, this housing crisis, a mass exodus, exports are down. GDP is down. But what you often see with China and its troublesome peripheries, whether that be Taiwan or Xinjiang, is that they try to throw money at the problem and investment infrastructure and that kind of thing, perhaps misjudging the real root of the issue. And integration with China is often the issue in Hong Kong. So maybe it will be different when it comes to the tycoons and the power they hold and the housing situation here. But I think the thought in most people's heads today when they see this rather broad and vague manifesto of glittering generalities is, how's he going to do it and is it real this time? Because they really have heard it all before in Hong Kong when it comes to we're going to solve the housing crisis.
Tom, you very briefly mentioned Xinjiang there, and I want to bring Steve in on this because Mr. Lee was the one in 2019 who sanctioned the use of water cannon, tear gas, even live rounds on protesters. And I see, after a visit to Xinjiang in that same year, he then told lawmakers that there could be lessons for Hong Kong's own counterterrorism strategy. What should we be expecting from him going forward, Steve?
I think that is a worrying sign. John Lee was a long-standing police officer in Hong Kong. He would have joined the police force probably in the late 70s and went through the period of the 80s and 90s when Hong Kong's police force transformed itself from once that was systematically corrupt to become the most respected department in the Hong Kong government. And when he was Secretary for Security in 2019, in a matter of weeks, he adopted tactics that completely squandered the legacy that the police built up in the previous quarter of a century, turning into the most hated and despised department in the Hong Kong government. And that is before he was even referring to Xinjiang as providing inspirational experience. He should look back into the history of the Hong Kong police force, where it got things right, where it earned public respect and credibility. As chief executive, he will have to earn that respect and credibility before he will have a chance to put his policy ideas into practice. Otherwise, they are just slogans.
And speaking of policy practices, Mr. Gao, I want to ask you, because I noticed amid the trials of those currently being prosecuted in Hong Kong under the national security law, which Mr. Li has been a big proponent of, I see even a Beijing-appointed judge has criticised the delays in terms of process there. Could China potentially go too far here?
No, I think not. Why? Because one thing should be clear. In Hong Kong, rule of law and democratic rights need to be fully protected. On the other hand, anything which denies China's sovereignty over Hong Kong is illegal, is against the national security law. And anything which advocates Hong Kong independence, for example, will be punished by law. This is very similar to many other countries. For example, in the United States, they practice a system, one nation under God, indivisible. No one can really use force to achieve independence of any particular state. That will be illegal, punishable by law. Many other countries have similar things. So you cannot say what's happened in Hong Kong under the attack against the Hong Kong government, attack of the very well-behaved police force in Hong Kong, is rule of law, is freedom of expression. What happened in Washington, for example, occupying the Capitol Hill, is illegal. No, you should know and use the same principle and same benchmark to judge these violations against the rule of law in the United States, on the one hand, and in Hong Kong, on the other hand.
Thank you, Mr. Gao. I want to bring in Tom here because he is on the ground in Hong Kong, and I don't want to let you go without asking you about public sentiment there now. It's been a while, I believe, since we've had any solid poll figures, but by last count, it looks like support for the opposition movement has increased, but then support for protests has decreased. We've obviously seen very few people out on the streets. There have been COVID restrictions in place. Now, given the low turnout that we also saw in the December elections as well, record low turnout, do people even care who's in charge now? Or is this a done deal for Beijing? It really struck me in the story we saw earlier from Adrian, that level of apathy. Is it apathy, Tom, or is it submission?
It's difficult to tell because most of the Democrats are behind bars in exile or have quit politics. And I think, if anything, it is more about fear. The big thing Victor gets wrong there is that actually in the US, you will not go to prison for your words, for waving a flag, for a sticker advocating independence. These are the kinds of things that people have been prosecuted for, and that's what's keeping people off the street. If you do want to look at any statistics, well, the last time they surveyed approval ratings, John Lee had a favorable rating of about 37%. And he has promised a local version of a national security law, which last time that was tabled in 2003, brought 500,000 people onto the streets. Again, I don't think you're going to see the kind of mass protests you did in 2019 or back then. But certainly, I think what's keeping people off the streets at the moment is the national security law and how effective it has been, I guess, in quashing dissent.
Well, we'll certainly be watching how this all plays out in the coming days, weeks and months. But for now, we'll leave our discussion there. Thank you to all of our guests, Tom Grundy, Victor Gao and Steve Tsang. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see this program again anytime by visiting our website. That's aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And remember, you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Anastasia Tay, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.